Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
It is indeed time again for Movies and Booze. Vanilla Jones, Chris Wasser, and fresh from his near-death experience, Dean McGuinness, joins us once again. Good afternoon to you all. That was like the most random story you told us before you came on here.
From a person who has some seriously random stories. Yes.
Go on, tell us.
Yeah, well, I was on a roller coaster with my children and about a month ago, and I just got a news report popped up on my feed today that some poor guy has died on the roller coaster.
But he wasn't there when you were there.
He wasn't there. No,
because that would kill you if you wouldn't get off.
Kind of freak you out a little bit. Yeah. But like it seems that he got on the roller coaster. The roller coaster worked perfectly fine. It went around, and then when it came time to get everybody off to get the next crowd on, he was
dead.
He wasn't
working perfectly.
No,
yeah.
No. So they've shut it down. It's Universal's new theme park in Florida, and it is a cool theme park. It's got Nintendo World in it, which if you really want to blow your brains, you know. Thing they've got boxes that you can go around and hit with your head, and they go bing and bing and bing like it does on the video game.
and they're surprised somebody dies. tell us about our two beers today. Yeah,
three beers today. We have two Irish beers. So it is Oktoberfest time tomorrow. So Oktoberfest starts in September and goes for the last couple of weeks of September and finishes in the first week in October. So we have two Fest beers, and we'll be talking about the Oktoberfest style or the Fest Märzen style. Kinnegar Leaf Kicker and Third Barrel Fest beer. So we're tasting the two of those. They are both from Irish breweries, one Donegal based and one Dublin based. And then the third beer that we're tasting later on is Eyinger Festmärzen, which is considered to be a signature example of the style.
Yeah. A question I probably ask you every year, why is it called Oktoberfest when it's in September?
It was the celebration of the marriage of Ludwig and Princess Therese. And the celebration was scheduled for the wedding, which happened in October, but it was a 2-week celebration leading into the wedding in October. So it always finishes in October, but it starts kind of 2 weeks before that. So the Oktoberfest kind of is scheduled to end in the first weekend in October and then for the 2 weeks running into it.
Okay, and was there a celebration like just full of drunk people in tents?
What they have now in Munich to be called an Oktoberfest beer, the beer has to be brewed within the walls of Munich. So that narrows it down to 14 beers that can be officially called Oktoberfest.
Okay.
If you brew a beer similar to it, then you can call it a Fest beer or a Fest Märzen or a Märzen. Oktoberfest style, people kind of look at you and say, why are you calling it Oktoberfest style? There is a word for it. But what's kind of particularly cool about Oktoberfest is one of the tents, which when you are having a celebration that involves consumption of beer, is something that everybody should consider doing. One of the tents has a crossbow competition.
What could possibly go wrong?
So people go over and drink large steins of beer, and then they go in and they are given a crossbow and
and someone that you don't care about too much.
Funny enough, I'm talking about a roller coaster and nobody seems to be talking about like anything happening at that. So
So what do they shoot at with the
targets?
Moving targets.
Yeah. And you hope that, you know, Hans isn't called by his girlfriend as he's about to shoot.
Yes.
Kind of looks over his shoulder for his thing. Yeah.
Insurance must be dirt cheap in Germany.
You got to wonder, yeah.
And so the two movies today are both Irish or Irish adjacent movies.
Yes,
absolutely. One could say that.
One of them is called A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey, which is a mouthful. It's Colin Farrell, Margot Robbie, both coming off the back of, like, they've had, like, a great run of, you know, know, look at the on the big screen and the small screen. And they play a couple of single people who meet at a wedding and sort of talk themselves into this weird romance, which involves them going on a road trip across America and discovering these roadside doorways that lead to each other's past.
Okay,
so that's all very surreal. Strange. Yes.
Yeah.
And then the other film is Girls and Boys, which is a very small Irish independent drama about a trans student at Trinity who meets this rugby jock and might have some sort of form of connection to this guy. But they meet at a Halloween party and they end up spending the evening walking around Dublin together. So major Before Sunrise, you know, Ethan Hawke, Julie Delpy vibes off of that one. A much smaller film. One of these films, it would cost nothing to make.
Yeah.
And the other one, I think they had to pull together $50 million just to pay Margot and Colin. So two very big different films.
Yeah, gosh. And does Dublin look well in Girls and Boys?
Beautiful. Which we'll we'll get into that. But it really does. Yeah, I mean, that's sort of like what you're hoping for with that kind of thing. Because Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, Before Midnight, all of these films are as famous for the connection between Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy as they are for the scenery. So that's I think that's the kind of thing that they were going for. We have to kind of believe in this romance, but we also have to sit there, or we want to sit there and go, doesn't Dublin look amazing? And I think it succeeds at that.
Okay, that's nice. Right. Okay. And now I know that Dean is very much Team Conrad. So there is going to be a movie from The Summer I Turned Pretty.
Dean, are you Team Conrad?
Oh, yes. Totally. Him and Conrad were in the roller coaster together.
Brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. The Summer I Turned Pretty fans rejoice because it finished this week. I won't say what happened. You've probably already watched it anyway. But there's a film coming from Amazon Prime Video to carry on the story, so to speak. This is really, like, this has been on, I think, since 2022. It's based off of novels by Jenny Han, and Jenny Han is also writing the movie as well. Like, I think this is the third season, the most recent season, and the final one, with this movie event serving as the kind of true finale. Like, this has captured the zeitgeist in a way that I just kind of can't believe. So maybe I should explain to Dean who Conrad is. Conrad basically follows this girl and she's like in love with the two brothers and can't pick between them, and it's the whole thing of like, are you a Conrad who seems to be like emotionally unavailable, bit of a drip, and then Jeremiah, I don't know, bit of an idiot but like hot, not really sure. I'm sure the Summer I Turned Pretty fans are going to be very annoyed at that characterization, but that's my truth and I stand in it. But basically she's in love with the two of them, doesn't really know what to do. She's caught between them over all these summers that they're like holidaying away together, and this last season was kind of really building up to who she's going to choose. Sorry, I actually also didn't say the girl's name is Belly for some reason. I'm supposed to be rooting for a girl whose name is Stomach. Okay, fair enough. But people are obsessed with this show. Like, it's supposed to be YA, it's supposed to be young adult, but the amount of adults that I know who are obsessed with this felt so strongly about Belly's choice and like what team they were on.
Oh wow.
I genuinely to the point where I haven't really watched, I've watched whatever I've needed to watch for work and stuff, but I wouldn't consider myself part of the fandom at all, but I nearly had FOMO watching people like foam at the mouth reacting to the show every week, a show which they would characterise as also being like kind of mediocre to bad. Like, it's just, and it's, you know, it's like, and I know we always have that with TV shows, that, you know, reality show TV shows, they're not prestige television, but you're watching like chewing gum for the brain, whatever. It's not even that people think this show is terrible. It's just that it's so mediocre that it's comforting and it's mediocre.
Ness.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And were people, not to give away the end, but she did make a choice at the end.
She made a choice.
Yeah.
I don't even want to comment on it because I think it will give away whatever, but like.
But were some people very angry at that choice?
But like, even for the lead up to this season or whatever, like the actors were getting abuse. Like I was looking at, again, because I'm chronically online, I'm getting posts of them on red carpets, whatever. And one of the actors, the guy who plays Conrad, has facial hair this time around, or he might not even still have facial hair. The comments were like, Jeremiah, shave that beard. Like, Conrad looks disgusting with this beard, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like, not able to separate the fact that it was an actor and a character. You know what I mean? And I think the show would come out and be like, stop harassing our actors because of a young adult story that you feel strongly in. You know what I mean? It's been a bonkers summer for anyone who turned pretty or who was in the Summer I Turned Pretty. So.
Okay, another question for potential presidential candidates, I should think. They should have a take on this.
And I would be worried if they're Team Jeremiah, that's
for
all
sure.
I said.
But there is enough to make it, to get a movie on foot of this, do you think?
I don't know, but I think for fans, anything that I heard from fans was that, it was kind of grand, but maybe there could be more to the story. Like, I don't think you'd be coming to it separately being like, what an interesting tale of two people in love. You know what I mean? I think it's pure fan service, which is like fine. Sometimes those things just exist and that's grand, but...
If you can make three Downton Abbey films without a single bloody plot, you can make
that's
one
true.
Film about
that. That's true. Anyway, I could see Dean getting very het up there about that. So let's have a drink. Tell us about the first beer.
Okay, so what we've got is we have Third Barrel Fest Beer and we have Kinnegar Leaf Kicker. Both of them brewed to the Fest Beer style or the Fest Marzen style. So in Germany, what you have is you have two broad families of beers, how lagers and ales are separated. Ales fold under what is called Altbier. So Altbier is a style in Dusseldorf and it's called Altbier because Alt is German for old. So it's an old style of beer and ale yeast was considered to be an older style of beer. Lagers then, Germany is pretty much known for the lagers that they brew. And with Festmarzen style of beer, what you would have had was the beer would have been brewed in March. Then it would have been cellared or lagered in German. And
Is that where the word comes from?
That's where the word comes from. Yeah, it's, it means a store or cellar. Mm. So it would have been stored over the summer months in a cellar at a cool temperature. And then when you'd come around to harvest time, it would be ready for drinking and it would be a kind of a harvest celebration. Mm. Now, with the Oktoberfest as a huge event in Munich, you've got this style of beer, which is associated with this time of the year. And the broader style family would include Viennas, which is a kind of a mid-coloured, a slightly darker golden lager, and Oktoberfest or Festmarzen beers. With them, they're quite malty beers. So you've got kind of honey, biscuity type flavours to it, brewed with a continental lager, Landrace hops. So a Landrace hop is a hop that has kind of developed over a long period of time and it has a kind of an obscure parentage. So sometimes with hops in America, they have developed hops that will give a very, very specific flavor. So, you know, if they want a grapefruity flavor, they'll channel the growth of the hop so that that hop has a genetic signature that will produce a grapefruity flavor. And those types of hops are often used in West Coast IPAs. With Landrace hops, you've got a kind of an obscure parentage over hundreds and hundreds of years. And the hops are just the hops. That's what they are. But when it comes to the flavor, it's quite a complex flavor. You can get kind of notes of tobacco, herbs, kind of earthy character. And it's the hop flavor that you associate with German lagers, you know, with Pilsners and Czech Pilsners. So yeah, really malty beer. Little bit above average strength, so 5% for the Third Barrel, 5.9% for the Leaf Kicker. Both of them quite malty. They've got a little bit of fruitiness to them, and the Third Barrel is a kind of dark fruit flavour, so a little bit of kind of blueberry juice or blackberry juice coming through in it. The Kinnegar has a bit of lighter fruit flavour, so kind of pineapple, or because of the bitterness in it, when you get a combination of pineapple and bitterness, it can come through as a grapefruit flavour, because breakfast grapefruit has a little kind of bitter tang to the back of it. But yeah, good versions of the style that are being brewed by two Irish breweries, one from Donegal and one from Dublin.
And because they're kind of Oktoberfest styles, do they only come out at particular times of the year?
Just around this time of year. So it's usually be a seasonal. You could get a Vienna style lager. You know, there are some beers that are brewed Zuber that is available from Poland. It's the number one beer in Poland. That would fall into the Vienna style. And that's a beer that's available all of the time. Mm. And it would have a similar character to this kind of a sweeter, malty character to it. Very, very nice beer. But yeah, it is kind of at this time of the year now because none of these three beers. Eyinger is brewed in the town of Eying. So Eyinger is from the town of Eying, like Budweiser from the town of Budweis. And that is about 20, 30 miles south of Munich. So because it's outside of the walls of Munich, they won't call the beer an Oktoberfest beer. They'll call it a Fest.
Crikey, yeah. I didn't even know there were walls in Munich.
Well, there's the kind of the remains of the walls of Munich. You don't have to go up and bang on a gate or
just
something.
Just outside the wall,
in.
They go, sorry.
Yeah. It's you don't have a large drawbridge.
No beer past this point. Thank you very much. Right, they're both lovely though. I must say. Would you like to talk about the good out of the two after the break?
Oh, we'll go with Colin and Margo.
Yeah. Oh God, you wouldn't then. Okay, a big bold, beautiful journey after this.
Oh Jesus Christ!
Hi, David.
David. What are you doing?
Mr. Nelson.
You're late, come on.
No, you're dead.
What?
You're dead, I was at your funeral, it's 4 years from now. I mean, look, maybe I was wrong, but get your pancreas checked, will you, soon?
I don't know what kind of pre-show routine you're doing here, but there's no time. The curtain's in, half an hour, everyone.
Wait. Mr. Nelson, how old am I?
You're 15.
I'm 15.
Cool. How old am I?
I don't know, 40?
I'm going to kill you today, get 4 years from now.
That's a big, bold, beautiful journey. Right. Okay. So the two characters, Colin Farrell and Margot Robbie, mm-hmm. like, what are their jobs? That implies one of them's in showbiz?
That's a good question, actually. I don't think the film ever tells you much about what they do away from this weekend that they're together. Because, like, he does live in a very, like, Colin lives in a very nice apartment in New York, and then we're led to believe as well that Margot's character, Sarah, she lives across town in another nice apartment. But there's nothing about what they do, just the fact that they're single and that they've had their fair share of heartache. And what you're hearing there is a scene where David, Colin Farrell's character, walks through a door. Now, the rules are just so flimsy in this thing. I had so many questions about how this trick works. But they walk through a door, and all of a sudden we're in a chapter from his past, but she's allowed to come in.
Okay.
And then later on there's a chapter from her past and he's allowed to go in, but there's chapters from their individual past where they're not allowed to visit each other. It's so weird. But anyway, he's back in high school there. That's a big moment for him in his teenage life where he professed his love to a classmate and she didn't feel the same way and he was heartbroken and he believes that that impacted his love life.
He's doing an Irish accent in this.
He's Irish, yeah. So he's supposed to have come over when he was 13, to be sure. I say it like that right. Because his parents, you've got Hamish Linklater in there doing his best Darby O'Gill. And so he went to an American high school. His mother was homesick. There's a whole big backstory there, which is not quite interesting.
Okay.
The basic gist of this thing is that you have two strangers meeting at a wedding one weekend. They're instantly attracted to one another because he's Colin Farrell and she's Margot Robbie. That's about it.
Sure.
And he tries his luck. She says, I'll only break your heart. What's the point? On the way home the next day, they both end up at the same burger joint that was directed by this weird magical GPS. Why? Because they both rented cars from the same magical car rental agency.
Is there like a little fella winking, mischievously at the car rental agency or anything?
You've got a tiny little flea bag inside this GPS. You've got tiny little Phoebe Waller-Bridge who we meet in the car rental agency with Kevin Klein, and she's very kooky and I think maybe German, I'm not quite sure, and she just says the F word all of the time. Why? We don't really know. But she rents each of these guys this car and she acts as their sat-nav, and she tells them to basically meet at this burger joint where the day after the wedding they have a burger, and then one of their cars breaks down, so they have to take the same car again, bear with me, and the sat nav encourages them to have a big, bold, beautiful journey together. Okay. And that's when they start discovering doors on the side of the road and revisiting.
And the broken down car, she doesn't have to return it or anything? There's no penalty for that?
Don't worry about that.
Cool.
And for some reason umbrellas keep popping up all over the place. You might have seen the ads for this thing on the side of a bus, and sometimes they end up in a very rainy version of their past. It's very, very strange. I can understand why the both of them were drawn to it. The person who directed this is, his name is Kokonada. He is an American filmmaker who last gave us a film called After Yang with Colin Farrell in it. And Jodie Turner-Smith. That was brilliant. Phenomenal ideas. So well executed. Really underappreciated science fiction drama that you should totally check out. So coming off the back of that, you can understand why Colin would be like, I want to work with you again. Mm. And the acclaim that got, you can understand why Margot Robbie moving away from Barbie might say, I want to do something a little bit smaller. It's still kind of maybe, and it's very mainstream. It's only, again, pumped about $50 million into this, but it has sort of an art house identity to it. But there's nothing underneath. Mm. I think it's trying to say something about life and lost loves and how, when one door closes, another one opens. But I'm not really sure it's figured out that part. This thing was on something called the Hollywood Blacklist for years. So, you know, this kind of vault of unproduced screenplays, which, you know, eventually end up going for millions because someone finally turns around and goes, hey, we should make this thing.
Yeah.
So Seth Reese wrote it, Coconut directed it. And yeah, it's just, it's a whole lot of nothing. This journey just goes nowhere fun, and it goes there very, 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 very slowly. It kind of flirts with a lot of genres, but can never quite pick a lane. So at one point, it's a bit of a romantic comedy. And if you've seen the press that Colin Farrell and Margot Robbie have been doing together, those guys have chemistry and they work very well together, but it won't commit to that. Kind of then goes down a very tragic romantic drama, a tragic familial drama. At one point, it turns into a full-on musical. And you're sitting there going, do that. Follow that. You know, like, and Colin Farrell is actually quite good at that, but it just won't commit. You know, you've got this art house film wrestling with something, you know, a little bit too conventional. I think the biggest problem is that because it's so messy, it's actually quite boring. You know, it's not a big, bold, beautiful journey. It's a big, bold, boring journey. And there's not an awful lot for those guys to work with. Colin Farrell is, even at his worst, do you remember Colin Farrell in A New York Winter's Tale? Which is just one of the worst films of the century.
Yeah.
But Colin Farrell is still brilliant in it. Far too good for it. It's the same thing here. He has a scene in here where he gets to talk to his younger self. And he's basically doing, you know, this thing that we would all love to do, telling your teenage self everything's going to be all right. And it's a gorgeous scene, but it's just 2 minutes of magic, you know, in amongst 2 hours of just, you know, a chores. Like it just doesn't work.
In the physical world, do they have a destination? Are they driving towards somewhere?
No, this thing has not yet figured out the rules. These things don't have to make sense all the time, but there has to be some sort of internal logic. You know, you shouldn't be sitting there going, where are they now? And how do they end up in this world without going through a door?
Yeah.
And what's the final destination here? Like, what does it all mean? It doesn't make any sense even to itself. Like it looks like maybe like everyone involved thought, oh, you know, we know what's going on. But as a viewer, I had no clue what was going on.
Does it have notions, this film?
It really does. It's just maddeningly pretentious. It's like, it's like it's trying to say, we reviewed The Life of Chuck a few weeks ago, and that was another film that kind of took these weird surreal routes to kind of, you know, teach you something about, you know, what it's all about, the meaning of life. That did it in a very charming, you know, very moving, tender way. This one tries to just be far too clever. And you know what? For the thousandth time as well, I was thinking, what's Phoebe Waller-Bridge at?
Like, oh, this is the perennial
what's going
question
on there. Because I get, you know what? If all Phoebe, if
is this
only,
an Amazon job, by the way?
No, it's not. No. So it's not. Oh. She still gets to go home and enjoy the Amazon
money for doing nothing.
But this is a Sony job. So, but I have this thing about Phoebe Waller-Bridge. It's like, if the only, you know, moment of magic that you have is Fleabag, I'd give both arms to have that. That is sensational.
Yeah.
Good luck
yeah.
to you. You don't have to do anything ever again. But at the same time, I've never seen someone squander their talents. When she clearly has so much talent on just wasteful roles, you know, a Star Trek franchise here, you know, a Bond film that really didn't do anything, an Indiana Jones film that nobody went to see, this now Colin Farrell, Margot Robbie film, which they are promoting to death, but I'm going to predict that it's going to make nothing at the box office because it's such a hard sell. It's a romantic comedy set in an alternate universe. That's not going to work. It's not going to work. Sorry.
Gosh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'll have a better film for you in a few minutes.
Yeah. Susan Kilkenny says, at that comment, Conrad is a drip. My 23-year-old daughter is roaring at the radio, saying abusive comments to you.
Sorry. Well,
this'll cheer
what
her
I've
up.
Seen of him.
There's going to be another, a third Camp Rock film.
Yes! What the people have been crying for?
Is there a second?
There was a second,
but many people have died in the intervening period.
So ironically, the second one was called Camp Rock 2, The Last Jam.
Yeah.
So that was a lie, first of all, because we're back. Camp Rock 3 is back. I will say, we can kind of poo-poo it or whatever, but like Camp Rock was like hugely successful for the Disney Channel, like one of the most streamed Disney Channel original films ever, made the careers of the Jonas Brothers and Demi Lovato. They are coming back for it. They played a band in it called Connect 3. And basically, we'll see where this is going here. So obviously Camp Rock 2 came out 15 years ago. So this has kind of set them up as Connect 3. They're super successful, but they're after losing the opening act to their reunion tour. So they're going back to the music camp to try and find new upcoming talent to open for them.
Okay.
And sure, obviously then tensions rise, friendships are tested and unexpected alliances form, you know? Everything we want in a film, truly. So
what age would the Jonas Brothers be now?
now.
Yeah, should they get on? Should they get on roller coasters? Let's put it that way.
No, like this is the thing because, like, look, okay, this is obviously a cash grab. Don't get me wrong, but like, they're still flat out. They're in the midst of this insane tour in the States. They're still kind of churning out albums after their hiatus that are doing. I don't know about the quality, but they seem to be doing reasonably well. That they're able to do this tour and sell out the tour in the States and all that jazz. So, like, I don't really know. Well, it's money, obviously, so it must be.
Oh, no,
a decent
of course.
Chunk
well, no, fair use to them. I'm just wondering, like, for the demographic that this might be aimed at, would the people be going, who are the old geezers?
Is it the thing of we're getting the mams in who remember us and love us, bring their kids who maybe are not familiar with them or only familiar with them through their parents? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And look, there's new talent as well.
I know they're still in their 30s, actually.
Yeah.
God, you'd think they would be older. They've been around for such a long time.
Yeah, because they started when they were essentially out of the womb. Like, you think, oh, they must be has-been, but they're not. Demi Lovato is not. Well, they say she's not returning to star in it. She's executive producing alongside the titular brothers, but I feel like they'll give her a cameo or something. I can't remember what happens with her character in the second one. I don't think she dies or anything, so.
Well, executive producer is like she chucked a few bob into it.
Well, maybe. We'll make a decent bit of bobber. But this is the thing. I actually don't know if it's coming to cinemas or like if it's going to be a TV only thing again.
Sounds like a TV only to me. Well,
yeah.
Not.
Yeah. Maybe in the world of streaming, it makes more sense now. Yeah. But.
And there's going to be a Siegfried and Roy movie. They have news about that.
Yes, I think I might have talked about this a couple of weeks ago or months ago, but I had forgotten about it. But there's new casting news. So this is called Wild Things. It's going to be on Apple TV Plus. Tells the story of Siegfried and Roy. It's actually based on a podcast, as all things are now, called Wild Things, Siegfried and Roy. 8-episode series. I think when I talked about the last time, I was talking about the casting around Siegfried and Roy, Jude Law and Andrew Garfield, which I think would be very interesting. Justin Theroux has just signed on to play Steve Wynn, who was the Las Vegas hotel guy who essentially brought them in and gave them the show or whatever. I'm not super familiar with that podcast, so I don't know how good that is to compare to, but like I'm intrigued by this. Like, it's basically telling of how obviously mental relationship they had and then getting to Vegas and obviously the show finishing up. So
yeah. Okay, I suppose we shall see if you're interested in that kind of thing.
On to Eyinger Festmarzen. So this is considered to be a kind of a signature example of the Festbier or the Marzen style. And it is brewed by Eyinger Brewery, which is a brewery that is located just south of Munich. You can see all three beers are in the same style, basically a multi-lager. And with the style generally, it's a style that it presents quite a challenge to a brewer to do it because as a lager, like if you've got an IPA or a Belgian quadruple or something like that, there's a lot of flavour coming from the fermentation. You've got a lot of flavour coming from hops and so on. With this, it's much more delicate flavours. So the character of the malt shines through an awful lot. On this, you've got almond, nutty, biscuit, honey, toasty character, and then the quality of the hops as well. With this, you've got a kind of a nettly, slightly peppery hop flavour to it. And it is just a superbly well-balanced beer. Really, really nice beer. 5.8% ABV. And that's, you know, what you're looking
at. Yeah, it's more or less for all of them, I suppose.
It's, what would be considered to be an above average strength, but not a strong lager. You know, you'd be going above kind of 6, 7, 8 for the beers to be going up into the stronger category. But yeah. Absolutely superb example of the style. Now, what people like me would have to do is, if you are studying a style like this, they would recommend about 10, 12, 14 versions of the style. And then you would taste those 10, 12, 14 versions of the style to understand the style. And it would give, but this gives a really kind of clear idea as to what the center of the style is meant to be.
That must be hard.
It is, especially seeing as there's 110 styles.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Yeah. How do you get through them all? Right. I thought the morning show would kind of become pants, but they just keep renewing.
They just won't stop renewing it. A lot of people would argue that the quality has gone pants or was potentially always pants, but people just seem to be obsessed with this idea, just Jennifer and Reese duking
but
it out.
But like after the one where they went into space and all that, it felt a bit jump the sharky.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Morning Show went to space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where we're at.
Third season, I think. Was yeah.
It? The reporters went into space.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I can't remember. I lost
Jen
interest.
Got to space or something. She no was way. Getting with John Hamm. I don't know. Something. Again, yeah, not okay. really sure. Yes, but it's been renewed. Like season four is just starting and it's been renewed immediately for season five. So like Crikey. People, it must not matter. People are watching. They're happy enough. But it's interesting because this season four, it's supposed to be set in early 2024, but they're not covering the election at all. Like they, and their justification is like, we tried to go at it sideways. We don't really have directly an election story, but we do touch on the idea of why we're two older white men running for president. So like, I don't know really what potentially is going to happen this season. I know Marion Cotillard is in and kind of seems to be positing as like a, the truth doesn't matter kind of thing. We just need to be first and et cetera, et cetera. But like, I don't know where they go from there then, if it's because up to now, despite the going to space thing, I know that's a bit demented. Although, I mean, we did see it with Blue Origin this year. So, I mean,
yeah,
not
that's
that demented
true.
In
yeah,
some ways.
That's true.
Like,
yeah.
Where are they bringing this now? I don't know. I just
but
don't
they,
know.
But they, we don't mention the election. We'll just have some comment about it, about two white guys, and then we'll forget about it because we're scared
yeah.
to draw the ire. The orange yeah. ire is like a like Mordor is kind of rotating around the United States.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's it going to shine on?
Yeah.
That's how terrified they are.
Yeah. But then it'd be so like, what's season five going to be about? Nothing. Because obviously the current political media climate is the one we're already living, where it's like we can't say anything because of yeah. all the things you just said. So what is it? Just the girls yucking it up? I don't
Probably,
know.
Yeah. I don't know. They might go to Mars, something like
Maybe,
that.
Maybe, yeah.
Let's move on to our second movie. It's called Girls and Boys. Here's a clip.
Are you spoken Trinity, yeah?
Yeah.
We are.
Winners for winners, huh?
Oh, you still love setting them off for Halloween as well.
Well, maybe we should get some.
Oh,
I think that's a cake topper.
I didn't take you for an equal opportunities kind of guy.
What are you talking about?
Don't worry, your secret's safe with me.
You said that I was trans, did you? Is that like a problem for you?
No, of course not.
There you go, there's it's boys and girls. Why is it called boys and girls, plural, rather than boy and girl?
Well, that's a good question, actually. I do not have an answer for that. But,
okay.
But
right.
I will say that the two main characters, we do spend two-thirds of the film with just those two characters, but we do kind of explore their inner circles as well. So I mentioned
okay.
that Jake is, you know, well, people think he's a bit of a rugby jock. And then we also meet the filmmakers that Charity's character hangs around with. I mentioned earlier that this is sort of that you could file this next to Before Sunrise, Before Sunset. For anyone who hasn't seen those films, please fix that over the weekend. You will not regret it. But what I mean by that is this is a sort of a dreamy, economical walk and talk romance. You know, the kind
yeah.
where you just kind of have these two lost souls connecting over, you know, lively conversation while, you know, fetching scenery floats by in the background. So it's a film that's lovely to listen to and also lovely to watch, which I actually think A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey might have been going for that. It's just, you know, just a whole lot, you know,
the characters,
characters aren't really saying anything interesting. With this, you've got Jake, played by a newcomer, two newcomers in this film, three newcomers if you count the director, Donica Gilmore. But you've got Adam Lunan Collery playing this guy, Jake, who just hasn't figured himself out at Trinity, like a lot of students. And he, you know, he's a good egg. He's, you know, he's good at his business studies classes, but he's not really sure why he's doing that. His first love is film. And he doesn't really behave like the other obnoxious rugby jocks. You know, he can't really stand them. It's all a bit too leery and laddish.
Yeah.
Then one day at the library, he meets this student, Charity, played by Leah Hannon, who is transgender and keen to make a name for herself in her film studies class. And she sees Jake. And straight, I'm not giving too much away here, but she sees Jake and it's the look that you give someone that you haven't seen in a long time. But maybe Jake might have come across Charity before, but doesn't recognize Charity for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
So the two of them kind of connect, first as strangers, then as friends, then there might be something else. They're at a Halloween party in an abandoned house one night.
Cool.
Halloween night, obviously. The guards come along, they shut things down. Charity and Jake are at the back of the party, so they grab a bottle of wine, they head out into the street, and they think, what will we do? we'll just walk and talk and share this bottle of wine. You know, one of them says, why don't we get fireworks like you heard in the clip there? Why don't we go back to this place? Why don't we go for a drink? They're just kind of just wandering. And while they're wandering, they have, because one of them is a charity, is a film student, she has a Super 8 camera. So she's kind of documenting her own film. So it's kind of this like film within a film play.
Okay.
Play, and it works beautifully. Among the many things that work for this film, I quite like that it captured that, you know, energy and spirit of just that random college night out, you know, either at Halloween or Christmas when you don't have that much money in your pocket. You don't really know where the night's going, but doesn't matter. It doesn't. Like those nights where you just make everything up with someone that you're really just happy to be with. You know, you don't know if they're going to see them tomorrow. You're just enjoying now. It captures that beautifully. And I think the performances are lovely for two actors that have never, you know, been in a film before. Brilliant. Donica Gilmore hasn't made a feature before. He's off to a promising start here. I will say the final act is a bit crowded because we move away from, you know, just the two of them into their circles to kind of see who are the kind of people that are hanging around with them. It's a bit crowded. That whole section kind of dilutes the magic a little bit, but there's certainly, it does find its way back, and there's enough here to kind of suggest that between Leah Hannon and Adam Lennon Collery and Donica Gilmore, we are kind of in the presence of like two promising actors and a very promising filmmaker.
Yeah, and but does it have an arc in the sense that
it's going somewhere, you know, there are some questions, you know, there are some secrets around the corner, you know, what is the connection between these two characters,
okay,
if there is, you know, again, don't want to give anything away, but once the, you know, well, I am giving away something now, but once that's out, like, you know, can they be friends, can they be something more, you know, is Jake going to, you know, finally stand up to the laddish guys and say, you know, all that's all those kind of, you know, jokes and inverted commas that you're making in the locker room, they're not cool, okay, you know, what's Charity actually going to do with her life after college? There is a bit of an arc there, you know, it's not just, you know, conversation for 90 minutes. Also, I think it gets an extra star just for being about 90 minutes. We need more 90
minutes. Okay, that is true. That is true. And in the depiction of Dublin, is it, you know, they're not like walking over Connell Bridge, the next thing they're on Stephen's Green, kind of thing. Is there a bit of that?
There is a little bit of that, because at one stage, I'm not really sure where the party is, but it looked like a place down beside, if the filmmaker's listening, tell me, it looked like it was down beside Dublin Castle, and then they're getting a bus out to where exactly, I'm not sure, but they're outside the convention centre at one point, and I'm thinking, how did you get there? But look, it is a lovely film to look at, and it's also one of those films that you can tell this was shot on a shoestring budget, and it's quite economical, but you know what, it's never cheap,
that's nicely pushed. Ralph, it's something that probably won't be economical, Martin Scorsese's next film, Jennifer Lawrence and Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yep, it's an adaptation of What Happens at Night, a spooky novel by all accounts. Apple's in talks to finance it, but not confirmed. They're an American couple, they travel to a strange snowy European city to adopt a baby, and the hotel they're staying in is full of freaks by all accounts, so
right, yeah, okay.
Giving The Shining, but again, I haven't read the book, so maybe I'm probably wrong on that.
Of course, has he got a deal with Apple now?
Had been working on stuff, that's ringing a faraway bell, so that makes sense.
Yeah,
I think it's like first look, and if they don't pay for it, then he'll go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So he can like make a film with Leonardo DiCaprio and Jennifer Lawrence, and then... No.
God, it's literally the plot of The Studio. Isn't that what happens in like the first episode of The Studio, where they try to make that Kool-Aid film and they're like, no, and then they have to buy him out, essentially.
Yeah.
There you go. Iron imitating life.
That's mad. Yep. That's mad. And anyway, lastly, though, this is mostly important. Fionnuala has a huge amount of detail on the next Taylor Swift movie.
Tell us everything
you know.
Because she's not giving any detail. The Hollywood Reporter reporting this week that Taylor Swift is releasing something to cinemas to coincide with the release of The Life of a Showgirl, which is coming out October 3rd. We have no details on what it is. I'm guessing it's a visual album. I'm guessing it's some kind of narrative, in inverted commas, to coincide with the album. Or maybe it's a load of music videos stitched together. Not really sure. That's what I'm guessing. But we have zero details. I'd imagine it'll all leak.
It just be like an advert for the album?
God, that'd be very boring, though.
There's
lots of talk that she wants this to be like the thriller of this century or decade. So like, being very aggressive on the rollout. So I don't know.
Okay, all right, still though, they'll go and see it no matter what's in it.
Exactly.
Thanks to Fionnuala Jones, Dean McGuinness and Chris Wasser.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.